Welcome back, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and we are now in December of 2014, and as you may have noticed, I'm back in the sunny climes of Western Japan, or the drizzly climes, depending on how the weather is treating us. But at any rate, we're back broadcasting on a regular basis here, so I hope you are back checking CorbettReport.com on a regular basis. And today we have an interesting conversation lined up for you once again with our old friend. I'd like to call him an old friend. He's a recently discovered old friend, Lionel. The veteran radio broadcaster and media personality at LionelMedia.com. Lionel, listeners might remember our previous conversation on Little Brother and the third rail of conspiracy theorizing. But if you haven't checked that out, of course, the link will be in the show notes so that you can do so. Lionel, thanks so much for coming back on the program.
Oh, thank you. In fact, the response was absolutely overwhelming.
It was a fantastic interview. So once again, I really do hope people did check that out. It was really fascinating for me, and that's the only criteria I have. So that should be good enough.
I want to say something before we do this. Let me just provide you with a little bit of an encomium, a panegyric, a PN, a plaudit, if I can. This is the future. You do know this. Everybody knows this. I just am so thrilled to be a part of a revolution. That's all I want to say. This is the garage band of information. This is the Steve Jobs of dissemination.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, that's the entire raison d'etre of this website and this podcast and this broadcast. So thank you so much for that. And let us proceed from there straight into our conversation today on a very interesting topic, one that at least is very interesting to me. And I'm going to take our lead from an article that appeared in the journal-neo.org publication, The New Eastern Outlook, by another friend of the Corbett Report, Maram Susli, better known as Syrian Girl, who wrote an article, What the Fake Sniper Boy Video Tells Us About Media Experts. And this article starts by talking about the many mainstream media websites helped a fake video go viral this month. The video showing a young Syrian boy running through sniper fire to save a little girl was exposed as a fake when the Norwegian producer Lars Klevberg made the fact public. One of the stated aims of the Norwegian filmmakers was to see how the media would respond to a fake video. And this article examines how that experiment went. And from there, Maram documents quite interestingly the various responses from the mainstream media, which were almost unanimously, in fact, pretty much unanimously, no mainstream media outlet came out and actually called this video for the fake that it was until it was actually admitted to be such. In fact, it was authenticated by numerous media experts and written about as if it were an actual fact. So again, if you haven't watched this this video clip, I suggest you do so. It's a very dramatic clip of a boy saving a girl in the midst of sniper fire in Syria, and it's just an isolated clip, like many such clips that we've seen coming out of the Syria conflict over the past few years. Isolated clips from YouTube that can't be verified, but hey, you're seeing, so you should be believing. Now, Lionel, I'm sure as a veteran radio broadcaster and a frequent television news guest, you are shocked to find gambling going on in this establishment, or in this case, fake media being reported as real, or maybe not so shocked. What is your take on this phenomenon of this fake video?
Multifaceted, my take. First, let me go back and just explain something. I remember, James, as do we all, moments of history where we never even questioned the veracity of it. I'm a trial lawyer by profession. I'm a prosecutor in prior life. And whenever I would introduce a document, photograph, audio tape, videotape, you'd have to authenticate it. Very, very simple. Mr. Corbett, I'm showing you what's been marked as State's Exhibit Number 1. Do you recognize that? Yes, that's me with Abraham Lincoln. Terrific. That's it. Thank you. Just some threshold. So authentication to me is something that is, I guess, in my DNA. And then sometimes authentication is presumed in law. Well, in news, authentication was presumed also. Think of moments, James, of iconic history that were reduced to a particular moment. A girl running down who was nude after she had been doused or been a part of a napalm bombing, the summary execution of that famous, which basically turned the tide of the war, the monk, the Vietnamese monk who self-immolated. Go down the list of these moments, these iconic, and it would have never occurred to us that this was bogus. Now, jump to 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald, we started to look at that famous picture with the interesting shadows. So the first question I have is, we are now in an era where we cannot believe literally what we see from anyone. And I can give you exhibits A through whatever. Now, that normally is called a conspiracy theory. And you and I talked about this before. But I'm saying, no, no, no. Once burned, twice shy. I have learned not to question this. The second subsidiary issue is the degree of authentication or vetting or analysis of the media themselves. Now, they probably, at first, let's face it, at first you would say, I did not know that this would have been faked or whatever. Okay, fine. Well, now you're on notice. The third level is the story itself. Take the gassing in Ghouta, where Assad supposedly gassed his people. And others were saying, no, no, that didn't happen. So we have pictures themselves that are under fire, the actual media themselves, which is the second issue, and the third is anecdotal evidence. So I ask you, James Corbett, why do you think that I suspect everything of at least being perhaps false when everything it seems that I'm looking at one point or another is susceptible of being false or is false? I ask you that, sir.
Well, that's a good question. And you raise an interesting point because there are different levels of duplicity and deception that are possible here occur at those different levels of the deception itself. They could be actual fabrications, as in the case of this sniper video, but they don't necessarily have to be. They can be authentic images of authentic events that, because they are simply a snapshot, do not show the context of those events and thus give a false portrayal of the events themselves. So this can happen on a lot of different levels. Sorry, what was the question again?
I have no idea what the question was. Can you blame me?
Ah, yes.
I don't. I believe it was a Pilger who said, don't believe anything until it's officially denied. I don't believe anything. Now, when we talk about the mainstream media, the sock puppet media, the echo chamber media, I know that you and I have discussed this a little bit, and this may not have the international interest that it does here in the United States, but we went through, and I have been aghast and appalled throughout our Ferguson controversy by hearing another dimension. Not only pictures that were false, events that were false, bad reportage, but people saying things about the law that wasn't true. Imagine me waxing philosophic about Japan, and I'm making this up. And because I'm on TV, because I'm made up, because I'm sitting there, because I have a Chiron or a lower third expert, Middle East expert, nobody even questions that. So I don't believe anything. I start off every story now with, so this is what you want me to believe. This is the official story. Got it. This is the official story along those lines. Now, the next issue is, and this is so funny because I know people, I'm not going to mention names, but people who are in mainstream media who ask the question, why would somebody fake this? And I don't even know where to start with that one. Why? Oh, I don't know. Maybe, let's take, for example, John Kerry. When John Kerry talked about Syria, we have to go into Syria with the paralytic face of his lurch incarnate. We must go into Syria now. Bashar al-Assad is a murderer and gassing. And we had to go in now. There was a sense of immediacy. There was no kidding around. This had to be done. Not really sure why, but okay. Then there was questions, other people questioning the gassing in Ghouta and gas and the other questions of Aleppo and what have you. And then It just went away. Not only do we believe everything, we're amnesic. We don't even remember a week before that they were not only rattling the sabers, but we had to go in now. So let me go back to my dynamic, James. False stories, torpid media, fake and fictive and fictional ersatz, synthetic stories, amnesia on the part of us. Oh, and the attention span of a gnat. So we don't remember. So throw in this hodgepodge. I've got multidimensional errors, both in the reporting of a story, the understanding of a story, the recollection of a story, the truth. But don't worry, in 2 days, it's gone. And we move on to the next story. I guarantee you, nobody but you and I and Syria Girl cared about this particular story. Certainly nobody in conventional mainstream media. That's
not true. Not true. Not true. They cared, but they cared in an interesting way. In fact, I found the response to the revelation that this was, in fact, a fake staged video to be particularly telling, because the very same mainstream media pundits and experts who had apparently authenticated this and were talking about this video were now outraged, absolutely outraged that these Norwegian film producers would do something like this, because it undermines their position of experts in the media, which is fascinating when you think about it, because these people, instead of questioning their own processes by which they arrived at the false conclusion that this was a real video, are now actually outraged at the people who exposed that faulty process.
Imagine this, we were in a courtroom, and I have hired you to authenticate a Van Gogh or whatever. And you say, based upon my expert testimony, this is the real McCoy. This is it. And I say, ha ha, joke's on you, Corbett. It's, as we say in New York, fugazi. It's not real. And you then, instead of being embarrassed, apologetic, obviously caught, not really that good, you've been exposed as the imposter. If anything, your credentials. No, 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 no. You turn around and say, how dare you question the great Oz? So it's a fantastic. There are so many subsidiary issues to this. I kind of forget about the issue and just look at the reaction of this. Now, let me go back, if I could, changing the subject just a little bit. Whenever ISIS, and by the way, have you noticed they're kind of, now ISIS, ISIL, AQI, Al-Nusra Front, Daesh, AQI, you talk about this transmogrification and shape-shifting of identities. But during the course of this, we had beheadings. And keep in mind, the attention span of a gnat, we saw 2, 3, and then we said, okay, another beheading. All right. And then somebody said, wait a minute, this is a while back, is this beheading real? What? Now, this is called, in my analysis, it's your story. Let me explain. Terrible story of a British person, whatever. Obviously, family is upset. And you ask, is this real? And they turn to you and say, are you suggesting that this family doesn't feel the love? How dare you? What makes you think? My response always is, it's your story. You tell me. Prove it to me, and I'm with you. But even at that, so let me add another layer. If you and I were contriving and manufacturing stories, a sure way to ensure that very few people would pay attention to the particular story itself is to have the story be so horrible that it almost precludes scrutiny by virtue of the fact that it's so horrible. So it's one thing to say, well, this Syrian, it's okay. He saved somebody and got away with it. That's all right. But a beheading, you do not question beheading. You do not question bombing, terrorist attacks, anything that has passed that threshold of horrible. So add that to the next layer where inquiry and investigation stops altogether, because the subject matter is so horrible that for you to even question that somehow means that this grieving family is what? In on the game? And I respond, James, with, this is your story. You tell me, and I will mourn with you. And I'm sorry to say that I've gotten to this point by virtue of the examples of fake, fictive, fictional stories that I have bought into, but I'm not so inclined to do anymore.
This is very interesting, but let's see. Okay, this is the Corbett Report, so we're going to go a couple of levels deeper. So first level, first order of magnitude deeper that we can go. First of all, I think probably my listeners, your listeners, will sort of understand that the track we're going on right now, and we're probably preaching to the choir to a certain extent to people who have seen through their own experience from whatever event, like a 9/11, something so horrific, tragic, that you just can't question it, as I myself did not for half a decade. There are those psychological barriers that we obviously have to take down and dismantle in the face of so many stories provably, demonstrably false that have been perpetuated in the media before. So agnosticism to any story seems to be the logical conclusion. We should obviously wait for whatever story is being presented to be actually authenticated in a transparent way, in a way that we can actually verify. I agree. I mean, obviously, that's the principle we should be striving for. But there is another danger here, isn't there? Because whether or not there is any authentication of this being real or this being fake or whatever it is, we are going to come into these stories with our gut reaction. We're going to have we're going to look at some sniper video like that and say, well, that must be fake because it goes against my narrative of what's happening in Syria, or that must be real because it confirms what I believe about the Assad government. Now, if we already have that prejudgment, I mean, we can't really escape prejudging things just based on our own sort of pattern of understanding, then how do we effectively take a look at this from a dispassionate way in which the evidence can actually persuade us into something that we might not otherwise believe? I mean, doesn't this just lead us to basically confirm what we already believe in each and every situation and allow us to take on those videos that seem to confirm what we believe, so we believe them, and then the ones that don't confirm what we believe, well, that must be fake.
Right. Interestingly enough, it's cementing the a priori determination whether we want it to or not, if I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly. It'll give you a aha, that's just as I thought, or bogus, just as I thought. Let me throw another one in there, another monkey wrench into the works, James Corbett. Take somebody who has the idea, for example, that this actually shows you the horrors that exist in Syria, the horrors of either the Assad regime or FSA, depending upon your point of view. And you say, aha, joke's on you, that's fake. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't have any effect whatsoever. They're saying, well, that may be, but that's just a part, a little tile of the overall mosaic. You see, one of the things that I find interesting about this, getting to the truth. Now, if you really want to get deep, of course you do. That's who you are. I love this thing called the truth. What is it? Okay, fine. So this picture is not correct. Who are the bad guys? Who is it that I am supposed to root for, like a football team? Who exactly? Is Assad a bad guy in Syria? Is FSA, are they the bad guys? Or are they this new contingent of rebel who in fact is worse than the person you're trying to supplant? Because if you look back and you look at, going back as an analog, Libya with Gaddafi, from Cyrenaica and Benghazi and Tobruk and Darna and Al-Qaeda, they make his Libyan army look like the junior league in comparison. The rebels, the freedom fighters, the one that we were supposedly behind, were worse. So then, in that particular case, we say, well, who's the bad guy? And then you say, well, what do you mean bad? So going back to this, you see a child, anytime you see a child, anytime, it changes the calculus of the whole perspective. I don't think it matters. I am even more pessimistic. For people in this country, in the United States, I think these gradations, these hair splittings, are great for the Corbett Report and great for the rarefied few who understand the subtle nuances and the complexities of this and the levels. But for most people, it's move on, whatever, because it's part of the Middle East. Those crazy people over there, doesn't matter whatsoever. Now, when I go back and I say, now let me ask you something. This was false, this was false, this was false, this was false. Not only the documentation of the particular story, but then later on the narrative. And I'm not bringing up 9/11, no. But I ask friends of mine, do you understand now maybe a little bit about my incredulity? Because remember, let's patent the Corbett / Lionel's Law. The greater the horror, the easier to fake because of the horror, because you don't want to question. Give me something that's a story and nobody really cares. But show me something. Show me. Remember, years ago, little babies pulled out of incubators, thrown out in this. I can't question that. Why? Stories that it's horrible. There's a story, and I don't know if this is true or not. Or false. But it was so horrible. It makes me think, using the, don't forget the Corbett-Lionel rule, this new law we're going to put in Wikipedia. You're going to hear it here first. There was a story of girls, little girls in a Muslim country. There was a fire. And they ran out to save their lives. But because they weren't veiled, because their faces weren't covered, because their heads weren't covered, or whatever the particular hijab or whatever they were supposed to wear, because they weren't wearing this, according to the narrative, they were forced back into the fire to die. Now, I don't know if that's true. I don't know. That's the story. Again, it's so horrible, we're not going to question it. So throw that into the mix, into the calculus as well. So what we're doing is we're almost looking at the psychology of the perception, how we, you know, if we could put fMRI studies on our brains and see the amygdala firing in the insula and knowing how. Because I know this is going to be done if it's not already done. I know there are people, neurologists, who are going to say, I'm going to put this story up and I have to have this. I don't want to get too corny here, but I believe in it. I've got to have this affect an almost mammalian fight or flight, amygdala, reptilian, something or other. And that's the story. Give me the kid story. So almost wag the dog. Give me a kid instead of my old shoe or old paint or old shoe. Give me a kid. Give me a kid. Remember the one being held by the father as they're mowed down? Father protecting your child. Identification, family, children, helplessness. Now, I'm not saying that didn't happen, but I can tell you that story is not going to be questioned by virtue of the horror of it.
I agree with so much of what you're saying, but I am going to propose an amendment to the Corbett-Lionel rule, or we can split our rules off into separate rules if you'd like. But I think, I certainly agree with what you're saying. The greater the horror, the easier it is to simply assert something and to have people generally believe it. However, there is an operational difference between actually conducting certain types of hoaxes. For example, in the case of putting up an isolated YouTube clip that the provenance is unknown, but people just authenticate it. In that case, you have a conspiracy of a couple dozen filmmakers and actors and people of that who know the truth and those who help to propagate it. And then everyone else is just kind of gullibly repropagating it or perpetuating that myth. Or you might have something like the Babies from Incubators story, which again was just a testimony that appeared at the United Nations. And no one really bothered to question who this girl was that was giving this, which is, I mean, that's pretty interesting in and of itself. But again, no babies were actually thrown out of incubators and no one actually died. So that was rather operationally easy to do. I think there are different types of hoaxes that are much more operationally difficult to achieve, especially ones where things happen, for example, at the Boston Marathon, where there's hundreds or potentially thousands of witnesses in the public. There are dozens, at the very least, of policemen, paramedics, etc., that would all be involved in this plot to perpetuate this myth of something that never happened, apparently, or only happened on a soundstage, or something of that sort. It's operationally different than something like these isolated YouTube clips or these random stories, because it does involve something that is subject to public scrutiny from multiple angles and involves a much greater conspiracy of people who would have to have been involved.
Au contraire, mon frère. Let me add another glitch, another subpart to this. I have a new, well, not a new, but the greater the public stage, the easier it is to conceal. Let me give you an example. Let's assume we were going to do, I got into an argument about John Kennedy, the assassination, and we were talking about Little Brother. And I said, can you imagine today with everybody with a camera, you would have thousands of Pruders, thousands. You could not do this anymore. Wrong. If you're going to do something horrible, I would say, James, do it in front of everybody, where everybody is watching. Let the cataclysm of horror begin, and just step back and watch what happens. First, you will have the internet people run in. You will have the eyewitnesses. You will have the kooks, the nuts. You will have everybody experiencing it. And in this paroxysm, this miasma, this vortex of excitement and craziness, it would be easier to cover than, believe it or not, the isolated story of somebody who says they pulled some kids out of a incubator and whatever. I am still amazed at how we are still watching to this day the JFK assassination or 9/11 or Sandy Hook. It was different. It wasn't really live. But still, by virtue of the horror, the number of people watching, it almost makes it even more hands-off. Okay, you're making a big mistake by daring to question something that involves children. You're daring to question something that involves something so horrible we can't. But you're now questioning something that was seen by everybody else, which brings me to my favorite myth of myths. Whenever you talk to somebody about the lack of likelihood of a conspiracy theory, or it's not a conspiracy theory, but a hidden theory being propagated, they will always tell you the same thing. Do you know how many people it would take to keep something like this quiet? Take your hypothetical and change it. In front of everybody? You're asking people to participate in the hoax? You would see immediately something that was wrong because of the horror of it. You can't keep something like that quiet. The people, the sheer number would negate any possibility of somebody covering something up. And I say no. The greater the forum, the greater the theater, the greater the audience, the more that's talking, it works against. It almost is easier to pull off by virtue of the fact that it's so horrible. Because what this is really is, what we're talking about, this is perception and awareness. This should be a separate study in, I was a psychology major, and perception and awareness was, I think, my most favorite part of it, because what you see and what you feel and what you perceive isn't necessarily what's happening. There should be a media news version of perception and awareness, because that's what this is. How do you see it? How do you process it? How do you handle it? And then you take it and you have to weigh the perception based upon your worldview, political background, orientation, am I an American, am I a conservative, am I a liberal, even more complicated.
It is very complicated, isn't it? And I'm going to throw out another complication. Yes, we have turned this conversation 17 times. I think a lot of the alternative media is developing around the idea of rallying people of like minds together around the flag that we are smarter than the average person. We are the few that understand what's going on. Everyone else is sheeple, and this type of rhetoric that gets thrown around, which is great and populist, and it rallies a lot of people around and binds them strongly around certain ideas. But I think that there is certainly room for self-criticism in the alternative media as well. And here's an example of this. So we look, for example, we started today's conversation with this rather humorous, I suppose, in one sense, egg in the face of the, or pie in the face, or something in the face of the mainstream media just gullibly accepting this story of this fake video. But that only works if the alternative media is equally critical of things that it holds and perpetuates as well. And I'll give you an example of this. Of course, when we talk about these types of hoaxes and things, one of the common memes in this day and age is the crisis actors, people who are apparently or supposedly being hired to portray victims of crimes and things like that. This meme can find its origins in something that actually happened on 9/11/2001, which was an interview that took place shortly after the collapse of the Twin Towers of a man that was not identified in the YouTube clip that eventually came to memorialize this interview. So he was dubbed Harley Davidson Man because he was wearing a Harley Davidson cap and t-shirt, I believe. And he spoke very eloquently and almost in a coached or rehearsed way about the collapse of the towers. First, one came down due to structural collapse because the fires were just too intense, and then the other. And he spoke in a very strange way. And so for many years, there was much speculation about this man, who he was, why he was delivering this scripted version of what happened that day. And this led to the idea that this was in fact an actor, and there were people who claimed to have identified this actor who was supposedly living in Vancouver, and they identified him by name and were trying to hunt him down, and all of this silliness that took place from that isolated clip of part of the interview. However, it emerged in recent years, someone actual, and I must admit, I myself have played that clip on this podcast before as a sign of something that was very strange that day. Someone in recent years actually hunted down the full interview, which is fully available. For people who don't know about the September 11th television archive, please go and look into that incredible resource that has several hours of Fox News and ABC and CBS or whoever else was covering it live that day. And someone actually found that interview in its entirety, in which the Harley Davidson man, the unidentified man, was identified fully as a Fox correspondent, Mark Walsh. Mark Walsh, perhaps better known as Psycho Mark of the Opie and Anthony show. And I know you're friends with Anthony Cumia, so you could even talk to him about Psycho Mark, who was interviewed on that day. And in fact, Opie and Anthony then interviewed Psycho Mark the next day on their radio program to talk about that interview, which has now become part of internet lore. So in the intervening years, this man has been completely identified. That interview has been explained by the fact this was in fact a television radio broadcast veteran who was obviously speaking in that manner. So will the alternative media admit that they went down a completely false road with that and overshot the mark? And if not, then that is a sign of the failings of the alternative media in an almost identical mirror image to the failings of the mainstream media.
Precisely, because nobody wants to admit I've been had. It's to use that Howard Stern version, Baba Booey. I remember one time there was a, World Trade Center 1993, there was a very prestigious, I don't want to mention his name, I think he's deceased, but a very esteemed newsman who said, "And now let's go live right now to somebody on the scene. Sir, what have you seen?" He said, "Baba Booey." He said, "All right, we're talking to Mr. Bob Booey." And it was even funnier because he would not, it was like, if this is a double cross, it's brilliant. You're going to get that. The same human shortcomings, the same insecurities, embarrassment. Let me throw another one at you, James Corbett. I'm not going to mention names because I want to encourage people to just do this. I don't care. Get it wrong. Admit it, but do it. Do it. Just keep reporting and talking and saying, and don't worry. It's the price you pay for unfettered, you know, freedom or whatever it is. I hear this a lot. This guy doesn't know anything about I was listening to this the other day about, let's say, 9/11. Because this guy never calls out Israel. And this one says, but this guy is anti-Semitic. And this guy doesn't know anything. But this guy doesn't understand the banking connection. But this guy doesn't understand. So adding to our, I forget what stage right now, within the alternative media, you'll have the, do you ever get a pizza delivered and it says, you've tried the rest, now try the best. Kind of puffery. Because they listen to my podcast because I'm the only one to expose. And I've met these. Everything begins and ends with Israel. That's it. And I'm not even, I'm going to say, okay, got it. Other people, it's the Illuminati. I'm not even sure what the Illuminati are. That's fine. It's HARP. It's HARP. It's the weather. It's okay, fine. So within, I don't want to say our group, but within people who come forward, you have not only people who get it wrong, but who dare say that I'm the only guy who gets it right. You've got a bias. Oh, Mr. Japan, huh? Well, of course, I know what you're doing. I was watching somebody on RT, Russia Today. Ah, Russia Today, huh? Russia. What does that mean? I don't know. I'm just saying that. Arguing 50s Cold War. So you know what? You get it. But one of the things, James, I promise you, everybody listening should understand this. When you are caught, you let people know. I'll give you an example. Nothing to do with this. Years ago on a show called West 57th Street, I believe, the amazing Randy was exposing this charlatan, this supposed evangelical healer. And they said, the amazing Randy has joined us. Randy, what are you going to do? We have a receiver. And we believe that this man, this evangelical, his wife, was actually going out and interviewing the people beforehand. And then she, on a recorder or a microphone, is transmitting signals to the husband. Let's see right now. And they listened in, and you could hear her saying, all right, third row, guy with a beard, he's got diabetes, you have diabetes. And they nailed him. So whoever the recorder, whether it was Meredith Vieira in those days, I don't know, she had him dead to rights. He said, let me tell you something, Mr. Reverend. I want you to watch something. He said, yes, ma'am. Very polite Southern gentleman. Yes, ma'am. Is that you? Yes, ma'am. Is that your wife's voice we're hearing? Yes, ma'am. So that's not the voice of God, is it? No, ma'am. So your wife was telling you that. He goes, yes, ma'am. So I don't know what to say. And he nailed her because he said, you got me. Next point. What's your point? Guilty as charged. Just do that in your real life, personal relationships. It doesn't matter. So if we, and I'm using the we now, if we want to be better, post a corrections. Be proud to say, let me tell you something where I caused it. Because John Maynard Keynes or somebody said, when the facts change, I change my opinion. Or I was wrong about that. Or I was negligent. It bolsters your credibility. I mean, haven't you been wrong? Haven't you, just in terms of, not so much wrong, but your perspective has changed. You were a different person then. You saw things differently. It's not really right or wrong. Always reevaluate, recalibrate. So it's something that you have to do. You have to be self-adjusting yourself, correcting, if you will. But I've done that. I mean, I've gone through major changes in terms of, for example, we're not talking about this, but for the longest time, I thought anybody who talked about UFOs, extraterrestrials, EVs, extraterrestrial biological entity, I thought these people were out of their minds. There's no evidence of it. Takes too long to travel. They're always anally probing some guy in the middle of nowhere, doing crop circles. They never get out and stretch their legs. Why don't they ever want to talk to us? Take me to your leader. And it's always, they always want to talk to these hayseeds, monosyllabic, rusticators with missing teeth. And I said this meme, and I would kind of be met with, people would, it turned into a routine. And then one day, I don't know, I happen to be reading this there internet, I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Where have I been? There's a lot of evidence of something out there. I was really wrong. I was hasty. I was as boorish and as, and I'm still kind of undecided. And that's another issue. You don't have to necessarily believe in something 100% where you can say, yes, I believe in this, like I believe in death. Or, yes, I believe in this, like I believe in birth and the sun. And but I'm open. And I was wrong in closing my mind to that. So you just, it as a person, you're better off doing it. And that's religion. Listen, if God ever speaks to me, I'm going to be the first, I'll call you right away. Hasn't happened yet. I'm not holding my breath, but this, I'm getting off subject here, but whether it's political or Syria or theories, we have to say we really made a mistake. And this is wrong because it makes you sound better.
Well, yes. I mean, not just because it makes you sound better, but if we are genuinely interested in the truth, then we should be willing to self-correct. And I think, I mean, there's a couple of things to say there. One is an important point that I think you're touching on there, which is the idea that if we ever invest our identity with the connection with certain ideas, then it makes it almost impossible for us to come back from that precipice if we are proven to be wrong. So I think we have to be very wary about putting our entire identity into a certain, you know, truth that we cannot possibly shake, because that's obviously going to be a point of weakness going forward. On that note, I would direct people to some of my previous podcasts, like my Patriot Mythology and More Patriot Mythology podcast, where I specifically retracted various things that I had promoted in the past because they turned out to be wrong. And I hope there will be
your biggest erratum, or to use that word, which one of my favorites, in seventh grade, there was a picture in our history book, St. Lawrence Catholic School, picture of Harry Truman holding up the Dewey Winds, and it said, quote, headline or news, boner. Now, whoever did this, whoever wrote this, was not familiar with. So dare I ask, what was your biggest boner in the scheme of, you using in terms of erratum? I mean, where did you really... Boy, did I call that one wrong. What was I thinking?
I never thought I'd be asked about my biggest boner on air. One that sticks out for me, because it was really, when I actually looked into it, the discrepancy was so huge, was this video, the confession video of Osama bin Laden that was discovered in Afghanistan in late 2001, that was used, propagated by the U.S. Department of Defense as definitive proof Osama bin Laden confesses. It had been floated in the alternative media, and I had unquestioningly parroted the idea that this was not Osama bin Laden at all, because the various still footage from that video that had been propagated online showed a ridiculous, squashed, fat-looking man that didn't look anything really like Osama bin Laden, that was claimed to be Osama bin Laden. So that was sort of the standard line that was propagated in the alternative media at the time. It wasn't bin Laden at all. It was just a poor actor. Actually going and finding the video and actually watching it, combined with some articles by some people who had broken it down, showed that, in fact, yes, it was absolutely Osama bin Laden, and it was a format conversion from NTSC to PAL or PAL to NTSC or something like that, which actually flattened the image, elongated it, so that at certain points it does look very strange and deformed.
Is this the famous one where he was in like a cinder block room and he was very dark and he was left-handed versus right-handed?
Yes. So it was referred to commonly as the Fat Bin Laden video, because this wasn't Bin Laden, it was Fat Bin Laden. I had propagated that in the past. When I actually looked into it, I saw this was clearly Bin Laden, and there was an very complicated but interesting explanation about the various format conversions and the details of where this was found and what was at the beginning of the tape. I won't go into it all now. It's in my Patriot Mythology or More Patriot Mythology, one of those podcasts, and includes an interview with the person who wrote the article that absolutely convinced me that that was in fact bin Laden. However, I am still convinced that the translation provided by the Defense Department, by the Pentagon, was completely wrong at the key moments of the confession, as proven by a German television news program some years later. So There's still more to the story, but I was so wrong about that, and I'm glad to have discovered the truth about that so that I'm not continuing to propagate something that is, in fact, factually incorrect.
What did this do ultimately to the narrative, to the, aside from whether it's him or not, did this change the facts of the case? Did you say, wow, he really was responsible or wasn't responsible, or is it, as we say in law, just collateral? It was just a collateral bit of evidence, and it didn't really change anything, but...
Well, I wouldn't say it's completely collateral. It didn't change my fundamental conception that Osama bin Laden never really confessed, because, again, I think it's more in the translation. But it did at least deepen my understanding of the video and the circumstances of how and when it was collected, which painted, I think, a more detailed picture for me of what was happening in Afghanistan at that time and how the video was likely part of a sting operation that was collected trying to get some sort of, you know, usable footage for exactly the purposes that it was eventually used, how they had to claim to have discovered it randomly in Kabul doing house-to-house searches. They discovered the videotape with Osama bin Laden because they couldn't admit where the video actually came from. It deepened my understanding in a way, and it brings me back to a passage I cannot for the life of me remember where this analogy comes from, but someone at some point talked about two people's perception of a river. You might have a steamboat captain who's gone down this river thousands upon thousands of times and knows every single eddy and current and rock and everything about that river and has that level of appreciation of the river. And you might have someone, maybe a passenger on his steamboat, who's never been on the river before, doesn't know anything about sailing or anything, and just is going and just enjoying the ride. They may both appreciate the river, but in completely different ways. And perhaps you could say that the steamboat captain has a deeper appreciation of that river. So
relative to his, it didn't affect the enjoyment of the passenger. This goes back to the old analogy of if you were to grab an elephant and I grab the trunk and you grab the leg and you grab the tail and we decide what is this thing. Throw into the perception. By the way, the complexity of this is I love this. I live for the, I want multiple layers of things. But let me also throw in bias. Let me throw in bias, especially somebody in mainstream media who has made a lot of money and a lot of fame doing this, whatever this is. And it goes back to Pavlovian conditioning, operant conditioning, Skinner, you name it. He received praise. His behavior was shaped by believing and propagating this particular way of thinking. So this person now is going to say, I'm going to do it again because I want to replicate and I want to enjoy that fame, the fortune. I'm not going to give up now. They like me now as a misogynistic, right wing, left wing, commie, whatever that is. That's also in our bit the a new bias. I know people, as I mentioned before, there are people who are, for example, the anti, for example, James Corbett. Not that there is, but they pick a big name in alternative media and say, yeah, but he says this. So you have that particular perspective also. And then give you another one. This is the worst thing for most people. Everybody, I think, in the course of their life goes through a period of time where they claim to be a libertarian, normally in college. It's this very simple thing where you say, freedom, smoking dope. Yeah, I can dig that. Libertarian, I like that. And then you tell them, hey, mom, dad, I'm a libertarian. You're what? Wow, I like this. I'm a rebel. I'm a libertarian. And then it goes, and I'm not suggesting people, there are deep-seated. Well, I have thought myself of being a libertarian. This is why I totally eschewed and rejected the whole label thing years ago. Until I started listening to what these people talk about, austerity and economics, and part of this thing called libertarian. So now, James, I am able to say, I'm a cafeteria, whatever it is. I like this. I like what Rush Limbaugh says about this. I like what Sarah Palin says about this. I like what Howard Zinn said about this, and Dershowitz, and Jesus, and Mahatma Gandhi, and Goebbels, and whoever. I'm a cafeteria. I can say I like that. Very, very few people are able to divorce themselves and disabuse themselves of a label, the left-right paradigm, whatever you want to call it. It's very difficult for people to do that because they say, what are you getting at? And you can say, you know, that makes sense. I reject a lot. And I accept a lot. Years ago, I was very, 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 very resistant to people who were of faith, people who were religious, that the borderline on psychiatric problems. Some do, but not necessarily so. I am not religious. I'm irreligious, but I've lightened my antipathy towards that. Also, because of that, my skew of the news when it comes to a religious matter changes. Because when somebody is against gay marriage, years ago I would say, he's out of his mind, he's a bigot, he's a hateful person. I may still think that now, but I can say, yes, but you have to temper that a little bit with the fact that kind of the way they were born, the way they were raised, the way they were, doesn't change my opinion, but it tempers and affects my, you know, reaction, antipathy, dislike, or agreement. So that's nuance. And nuance and grays are something that people, God, especially in talk radio, never go on and ever. And commercial terrestrial say, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know. Is capital punishment wrong? I don't know. No. That may be great for dinner table talk, but not there. So it is the death sentence. So my thing is that I am so at home with not committing to a position and just giving you my feel, my observation based upon this now. And if the facts change, as Kane said, I'll change my opinion. I have no problem with that. That's why I get so upset when they say, you know, you're a liberal. Liberal? What are you talking? You're a conspiracy theory. No, I'm not. I'm not anything. I may take from moments. I'm an omnivore, an intellectual omnivore, so to speak, but I'm not of any particular orientation so connected with it that you can give me a name. That's the worst thing. But in terrestrial radio, talk radio, you better do that or else you're through.
Yes, you need to brand yourself, you need an identity, and you need to have a team to play to. Yes, well, nothing really delights me more than the thought that there are people right now who are outraged at us even having this conversation. Just speak plainly and just say the truth, and why are you talking about this philosophical garbage? Nothing delights me more than the fact that there are people outraged that we're even discussing this right now, because honestly, I think if the Corbett Report contributes anything to this world, I hope it is at least leaving a little bit more space for reflection, criticality, and philosophical thinking with regards to this media production that is happening right now, this alternative media production that's happening, which needs to happen. And I agree. I think more voices to the mix is a good thing, not a bad thing. It just, of course, brings with it its own biases and dangers that we have to be aware of. So I think, again, the ideal is to to take ourselves out of that matrix as much as possible and achieve that nirvana of I'm completely unbiased. I don't think we'll ever get there, but we can strive for that as an ideal and think about the various ways that we can fall into pitfalls and traps along the way. Having said all that, we've had a very lengthy and interesting conversation so far, so I think we'll wrap it up there at this point. But is there anything you'd like to direct the listeners to, or with regards to your own media, or any appearances that you'd like to tell people about?
The simple thing is you go to lionelmedia.com. I do podcasts, and I do regular postings and the like. My YouTube channel at either Lionel Y2K or Lionel Nation. I thought, that's pretentious. I like the Lionel Nation. So look for that. And also, I'm a big – Twitter is, to me, the lifeblood, the pulse, the synapse of the world. And that's at Lionel Media. And let me just tell you, I am an absolute huge fan. What you did on Gladio 2, that has to be a required viewing. And I'm serious. For people in school, whether in grade school, whoever can understand that. That is such a critical, what you and Sybil Edmonds have done is absolutely amazing. And so I want to just throw that one in because I was watching you just the other day. I think all 67 chapters of that. It's one of the most thorough and entertaining pieces I've ever seen, sir.
It's one of the most important pieces of information I've ever attempted to convey. So if I've done anything towards the way of inciting curiosity in that, then that's, I think, at least my part of the job done. But I certainly hope others will continue to propagate that information because it is so important. All right, Lionel, as I say, we'll wrap things up there. Once again, directing people to lionelmedia.com. Thank you for another stimulating conversation. I'm looking forward to many more to come.
Thank you, James. It was a pleasure.